This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe.
Welcome to the inaugural podcast of Games at Work. This is Michael Martin, and I'm really happy to be back again in the podcasting chair with the podcasting microphone with my co-hosts, Michael Rowe and Andy Piper. We are together once again to start a new year with a new podcast, extending on what we did from last year and the years prior with Dog Ear Nation for this new capability called Games at Work. And you can find us on gamesatwork.biz. And we'll be talking about games, playing games, games at work, and coffee, maybe dogs. Over to you, Michael.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Welcome back for those who were listeners of Dog Ear Nation. And welcome to the new people who are just joining us with this new podcast. Really excited to get back in front of the blue microphone here, the snowball, and to talk about games and impact of games on business, the impact of gaming and gaming technology and gameplay on how we all do our work and have fun. So, Andy, welcome.
Hello. Yes, so we're together again, but remotely. But yes, hello, I'm here. I'm here in, I guess, what used to be Dog Ear Nation UK Studio 3. So there's a little bit of background noise. yes, very, very pleased to be back with you two bozos.
Excellent.
And that's one of my favorite bands. Don't call them that.
The U2 bozos?
Excellent. We'll find out what we're all interested in at the moment.
Yeah, so the evolution, if you've been following along or if this is new to you, of, you know, how do we come to be together here to be talking about games and games at work and what does it mean, goes back a number of years. And we won't take the extended trip down memory lane, but we wanted to help our new listeners and our longtime listeners remember, you know, what brought us here together in the first place, along the lines of what Andy just said. And it all started for us several years ago, many moons ago, about games anyway. It was about how people could get so enwrapped into games and spend so much time and so much energy and money playing games that had, in many respects, a startling resemblance to work. People would craft things. People would form guilds. They would build houses, spaceships, environments. They would buy their own, you know, massive computer gaming rigs in order to play these games more effectively with one another. And that was that really stemmed, Michael, from your experiences, my conversations with you in the Star Wars universe. That's where it really all started.
Actually, the Star Wars galaxy.
Oh, the Star Wars galaxy. Yeah, let's be specific. You're
right. In a galaxy long, long time ago, far away. And it does seem long, long time ago and far, far away, except for, and I might as well just jump right in, the fact that they finally released a brand new MMO in that universe called Star Wars The Old Republic, and I wish I had more hours in the day. That's all I can say.
Well, the important thing is that they need to have Wookiees there, and can we teach them to dance?
And there currently are no Wookiees as playable races.
No way. That just kind of bites.
I've seen a couple of Wookiees, but they're NPCs. Mm.
Did you shoot them?
No, didn't shoot them. They were in the they were the good guys, and I was a good guy. I'm not doing the bad guy route this time. But we shall see.
Were they on Endor?
No, they were in Coruscant. You're not going to play the Wookiee defense on me, babe.
Yeah, well, I'm just checking. Yeah, so a long time ago in a podcast universe far, far away, that's where we started. It was all around how people get so wrapped into games and wouldn't it be interesting and isn't it interesting? And it's proven out to be exactly that case, that the playing of games certainly does have a work benefit and an economic benefit in harnessing crowds to provide capability that is desirable by those that are organizing the games and getting real value out of the game players. And we see this trend is growing and growing. And this is the reason why we've renamed the podcast. We're kind of getting back to our roots on it and really zeroing in and focusing on what's the latest things happening in this space. What do we think about it? Where do we think the environment is going? And what opportunities are there to extend it even further?
Well, one of the really interesting things, and I've been doing a lot of factual research around this space recently, is how not only is it games and game mechanics that have become, I would argue, almost commonplace in the business environment, is that crowdsourcing and social sourcing is added on top of that to really impact the way businesses and the way individuals are interacting from a work perspective. I mean, just look at the number of people that over, 10 plus years have been competing in MATLAB's programming competitions.
MATLAB competitions?
Yes. So MATLAB, the company that creates MathWorks and other tools, has programming competitions to improve algorithms for mathematical computation.
Well, so does Netflix, right? Was it Netflix?
Well, Netflix back in 2006 did the Million Dollar Challenge, which said that if you can improve their recommendations algorithm by 10%, you could get $1 million.
So surely that's a very similar concept to the MATLAB kind of idea, right? It's
just
applied within a commercial enterprise, right?
Absolutely, which is great.
So can I take this in an entirely different direction for a moment?
Hopefully.
So, we're counting on you, Andy.
One of the things I have been thinking about as we've just done that introduction is actually a totally different angle on this, which is the extension of social environments to the gaming sphere through online games and how that can reinforce the way we work together, if that makes sense. So, for example, I will get on my Xbox in the evening and play games with the guys I work with. And we socialize and we play games and we have fun. And it strengthens that relationship and bond and generally enables us to work more closely together at work the next day because, we have that shared social experience. And in the same way that we've spoken before in previous lives or about how being social online changes this stuff. It changes our relationships and changes our ability to collaborate and get to know one another.
Andy, I think that's spot on, and I actually like this thread because one of the things that we've all realized, I mean, you're in the super secret recording episode location number 3 for the UK, and the likelihood that we actually physically meet each other again this year is pretty slim. And we think through that and we say, well, how do you keep that social bond and that interaction to where you become more effective in the business space? And games is a perfect example of that. Even 10 plus years ago, gosh, I hate to say even longer than that, I used to do what I call network stress tests with my development team, and we would all play Hexen or Quake and just have a 1 hour... 5-6 o'clock at night, Wednesday's kill zone, where, if someone was driving you nuts during the day, you get to kill them that night.
Nice.
And that helped facilitate a clear better message. Work relationship.
It did, because you got your frustration out. When you frag your partner or your coworkers, it does make work a little bit easier.
Nice.
Well, we did those kind of things with the game You Don't Know Jack years and years ago, where we had to run worldwide around the clock level support, and there were some times when there weren't support calls coming in, and You Don't Know Jack is kind of even more fun at 3 a.m. when you're had your third or fourth Mountain Dew Code Red. at least that's what I found to be the case.
Yeah. So it's all the interesting thread here is there are lots of different types of game mechanics that we talked about, right? You don't know Jack is a quiz show, right? It's a question answer game, Hexen or Quake or Call of Duty. Those are first person shooters where you literally get to frag each other. Other games are quest based, Star Wars Galaxies, Old Republic, where you're teaming up to do specific complex tasks together in a positive light. Or you can do PvP there. So all these are really things if you equate them back to the office, so to speak. There are times in the office where it's important to work together, and there are times in business where it's important to frag them.
Well, and depending on what your business is, that your business can lend itself really well to a game kind of market anyway. So one of the games that we've all been playing now together for a long time is Foursquare. And many people will say, well, Foursquare isn't a game, and it's a check-in service. It's a location-based application where people get to know where you are, and they maybe would bump into you and be able to go meet up or something. However, Foursquare had built in right from the get-go a ladder for recognizing who's checking in more frequently than others, reward systems around badges that you can see for what your friends have or what they don't have, and most recently, it's providing a level of information that the Foursquare company can use for advertisers, for businesses that want to know who their loyal customers are, for a variety of things that works right into their business model for what they're trying to accomplish while providing the player enough of an incentive to keep doing it, because it's a little bit of a pain to remember, oh yeah, I just arrived at the coffee shop, I'll go ahead and check in.
Well, I actually think, let me pick on Foursquare for a second, because there's an interesting side effect of the game, right? One of the things that I've noticed is a lot of the small local shops at check-in time are starting to have these specials that show up that have nothing to do with the shop. It's really a partnership between Foursquare and American Express to try to get you to link your credit card to Foursquare.
Yes, and that's a relatively new thing.
Yeah, so here's a side, I'll put the word benefit in air quotes, even though you don't see it, of tying, American Express trying to take on the capabilities that, a small startup like Square has been doing with their, I think they call it the Square Wallet or something like that, or Square Card, which allows you to, walk into a restaurant that's participating and just say, here, let me have one of those and walk out. Never pay. It knows who you are. When you walk in, the owner of the location goes, oh, hi, Bob. Welcome thing. And do you want your usual? Because it builds a history, et cetera. And it was a kind of an interesting business model that they were doing, and it evidently has taken visibility by Amex. And Amex is trying to get into that by leveraging Foursquare.
Well, and if you take that, as we've said before, one extra step, you could see where there might be a point of sale integrated environment that would recognize the customer as they're walking in and do just what you said.
That's what Square does.
So is it do it through the web or is it through a dedicated device?
It's an iPhone app.
Ah, okay.
And so Square started by undercutting the big credit card companies and doing credit card processing with a little cube that you would plug into the audio port on an iOS device, allowing so that you and I could, as an example, we're splitting a tab and it's like, oh man, I don't have the cash. Can I just run you a credit card? And you fire up the Square app and say, sure. And it deposits money into your account. At much, much lower fees than the traditional credit card processing infrastructure required. Then sure. Square decided, it'd be really cool now that they have this information and all of it tied together. Now I can take and put your wallet of cards in an app And when you walk into a location, there's a handshake between the location and that app, which is secure on your device. And you can literally just open up a tab and have it run directly to your card via that app. Similar to what Google was doing with near-field communication payment on their one device.
I didn't realize they'd gone that level already. I mean, I knew that they had the facility to swipe and accept a payment. I knew that. What I didn't realize is that it does a recognition upon your arrival and says, oh, Michael just walked in. He typically gets a bagel with butter and a coffee.
Yep.
That is pretty dang slick.
It's pretty impressive. And, it drives the gaming loyalty because you're going to go to those stores that have this capability. It provides another level of interaction and another level of integration between the business and its customers.
Yeah, very, very, very cool. Andy, have you noticed with Foursquare, another thing that I've seen it do recently is this concept of leveling up, so that I like Mexican food. And so I've gone to a number of different Mexican restaurants and I check in when I go. I've recently received these notifications about leveling up in Foursquare. Has that happened to you too?
Yeah, you get them on because I check into coffee shops quite often. So I guess I'm on about level 3 of whatever that option is now. So they just give you a points bonus after a certain number of check-ins of a certain type.
I noticed that when you integrate Foursquare with Waze, there's a leveling up mechanic there too. There's a road warrior.
Yeah, I think it's probably the same thing. So they've just attached to some of the badges the ability that as you continue to effectively just earn the same reward over and over again, they give you a small points bonus. So, yeah, it's a way of continuing to extend that same dynamic because really it's a very, very simple game they have there. It's just a points accumulation as you go in and check into different places. And of course you get bonuses for checking into new places, being the first of your friends to check into new places, being the first to add places and so on. So it's really not a complicated thing at all. Of course what's interesting is what happened with Goala, which was the really big competitor to Foursquare, which was just just very, very similar concept. And then they pivoted late last year because there was a feeling that they'd kind of failed to overhaul Foursquare. So they pivoted to become more of a kind of travel guide and then have finally been bought, or the people, I should say, very clearly have been bought by Facebook, and the whole operation's been shut down, which was a real shame for me because I always preferred Goala's much more colourful approach, and also the idea of collecting different objects as you moved around around the game map, if you like, or the world.
The pins,
Well, both the pins that you could get from checking into new states and new locations and new countries, which became your kind of passport, which, of course, in Europe in particular now, you don't have the visa stamps that you used to have crossing borders. So, it was a nice kind of pictorial record of places you'd been. But also the objects you could collect, and then different companies could sponsor to have their own objects included, or to have a particular location have their own logo added. So I thought there were some nice features to that particular location-based network and game. But they've gone away.
To riff back on leveling up in Squarespace, one of the things that I think drove that, or at least mirrors that, and also a lot ties together is the new app that the guys over at Milk came out with called Oink. Have either of you played with it?
No.
Yep.
And yeah, I really like it because you level up based off of your expertise on specific categories. So you end up going to a place, and instead of rating the place or checking in at the place, you're actually rating specific items, purchasable items or whatever, at a place. So, for example, on Oink, I go to the Bean Traders, right? And I oinked about my red eye that I drink. And so I'm leveling up in coffee.
Yeah, I know that Oink has been has had a flash of publicity and interest recently, but I'm really struggling to find it compelling myself. The idea of it, it's a Kevin Rose's milk, as Michael says, the idea being that you can rate anything. I don't know. I just find it a bit too fiddly and pointless, to be honest. Is that I don't have the same loyalty or interest in it that I do with...
Where's the game in it? Where's the game in it, Michael?
The game is other people rate the things that you do. And so as you become more influential in specific tags that you are focused on, mm-hmm. you level up. And the game is to become, you know, my example is a coffee expert or a beer expert, right? And because it's related to specific things, you could go to a new area and say, hey, I'm really looking for a good cappuccino, not I want a coffee shop. And you may find that the best cappuccino in the Research Triangle Park is at the bar in a restaurant, I mean, in a hotel, which is not a normal place you would go to. So it's what are the specific things that you are interested in, and then go find those, which may open you up to new areas and new places to go to.
I see. It almost feels like that ought to be an integration with something like TripAdvisor or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I don't know how far it will go. As Andy mentions, it got a lot of initial buzz because it is, you know, new from Kevin Rose and his team over at Milk. He's the guy who originally started Dig and left Dig. He also is one of the owners of Revision 3, the podcasting network. So he's got a large megaphone to tout what they're doing with it. But you know, it's an interesting thought. We'll see how long it either takes to take off or if it survives.
So circling back for a sec also to Waze, because there may be people in our audience that don't know what Waze is. So it's W-A-Z or Z for our UK listeners, W-A-Z-E. I love their tagline. It's outsmarting traffic together. So the game there is by simply driving around with the Waze app open on your mobile device, it is taking stock of where you are by your GPS. It's taking stock of how quickly you're traveling and correlating that information together with other Waze users that are around you or elsewhere in the world to calculate how is traffic moving so that it can now route you. You can say, well, I'd like to go from point A to point B, and it can notice where there might be traffic jams and the like and can route you around them because other Waze users are sitting in those jams and they're reporting them and they know about it. So it's a business model where you're getting real-time updates of traffic conditions, where there may be road hazards and the like along the way that people can report, and that you're building your map database in a way that is dependent upon real users driving on real roads as opposed to some of the other map companies that are out there.
Well, I think that the interesting thing here is the business model, because what you were describing is the capability. The business model is it's free to use.
Yeah, as a driver,
and most
yes.
things like Tomcat, TomTom, you pay for their app on devices.
And for
real-time traffic. Because real-time traffic is something that's pretty common now in GPS systems. I recently saw on my Twitter feed somebody asking, hey, I'm looking at the TomTom app. I don't have the Cradle. Is it worthwhile? And, you know, I've got the Cradle. I've got the app. I spent the $100 for it when it first came out. And I said, you know, I don't use it anymore. I use Waze. Because, one, it's more useful. Two, I don't have to worry about any location I'm at. TomTom and other GPS apps tend to charge you for regional maps because the maps is where their value is. Mm-hmm. Here the map was generated for those of us who played Waze when it first came out. You can actually draw the roads. You would say, hey, I'm driving an area. There's no map here. Go, and Waze would track the actual place you're driving, and it improved and enabled drawing the map out for them.
Yeah, it was paving the road.
But there's no because there's no money involved, as far as I understand, I mean, where there is no paid service involved in Waze, there's no incentive for the company to provide any kind of accurate service. Or so, you know, what you've just described relies on a crowd, a good number of people to be using the app in a particular area for it to be particularly effective. I used it a lot when it first came out to assist with the mapping. I found that really interesting and engaging. Mm-hmm. You still get the areas which are not well used by people with, you know, gadgets and who are running Waze. They're going to have the underpopulated areas where there's no reason. They therefore have no map. They have no road.
Yeah.
You have the relatively smaller pool of people using the service not providing the same quality of traffic information that the TomTom service can rely on by crowdsourcing everyone with the TomTom devices speeds information from, you know, so they can work out how quickly particular routes are moving. And where is the long-term, you know, financial future of that company? I don't get me wrong, I have a Waze clip-on flag for my car, right? I'm a big fan. I think it's been a fascinating service. But you have to wonder, and Michael, you know, I remember going way back, you know, you had this massive fear, you know, how's Twitter going to monetize? How's Twitter going to stay afloat?
Yep.
And of course, they have begun to do that now. But the same applies with Waze. If you're not prepared to pay for those premium features, you just want them for free all the time, then you are reliant on a number of transitory services that pop up to deliver those services.
No, I absolutely agree, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, I still have and keep updated the TomTom app, right? Mm-hmm. Because I do want to make sure that if I get in a situation where the coverage is not there. But at the same time, the more people that use it, the better and more reliable it becomes. I've found that at least in the RTP area here in North Carolina, there are a significant number of Waze users, and the traffic information tends to be fairly accurate. I do see that I tend to vote down things when I find that it's not there anymore. I doubt a lot of people do that. A lot of people seem to report the initial statement or the initial wreck or the initial, you know, cop on the shoulder or whatever. But then you see it's been there for, 3 hours. Well, they're probably not there anymore. So that game of keeping the data current is important for people to engage with for the value of the service you're getting provided. But yeah, I have not figured out what the business model is yet for Waze themselves.
Well, yeah, I can't say that I pretend to understand it either. But to your example there of, you know, of a wreck that's no longer there anymore, you can actually vote it down. You know,
well, that's what I was saying. I do vote it down. I find a lot of people don't.
well, sure. And if you're driving, your number one focus ought to be on, well, let's just say driving, right?
Nah.
So, and I love the leaderboard, you know, element of it. And I remember, Andy, when you were doing tons of road munching, you know, to find those new roads and pave them through in the UK. I think we've all, you know, climbed pretty high in the overall leaderboards.
It worked at the time when you, number one, you knew where you were going. You were traveling your regular routes, or you were gaining points in the game for discovering new routes. But at this point, it's far more convenient for me to fire up the TomTom, use the real-time traffic, use the fact that they are actually detecting my speed and adjusting the traffic information for everyone based on, you know, the road conditions that I'm encountering. I think both are amazing models, and I've enjoyed, in particular, I do enjoy the social features built into Waze as well, but I found myself using it, you know, much, much less as time's gone on.
Well, I did too, and for a variety of these games, I've done the same thing. I've seen my usage drop way down, but that's because the game has lost a level of engagement for me, right? and I wind up turning attention to other games. So I can see where there's certainly space in a four square mayorship kind of environment, in a Waze traffic kind of environment, in the Monopoly City Streets kind of environment of, you know, owning a particular street as that particular game allowed you to be online. There's a lot of room for more to happen here, and for the monetization element to go around them, whether we're talking about expertise like Michael you're mentioning with Oink, or we're talking about driving additional traffic that the business can say, well, the reason why I'm getting more traffic coming to my particular place of business is because of these social games that are out there. There's value in that, and businesses should think about advertising and investing in order to drive that actual traffic, provided that they can demonstrate a direct connection to it. Because the advertising piece is a little different, I think, now than it used to be, where you would just do radio advertising or print or television or, you know, even web click-throughs. Now we're looking at really demanding hard evidence that targeted advertising is actually delivering what you need. Andy, you were about to say something, I think.
No, I mean, I think that a lot of the location-based services or services with locations involved can clearly benefit through attempting to sell advertising or information through those things. I mean, you see Google moving a lot more into that space, enabling locations and business owners to claim their locations on Google Maps, provide additional information around the subspace. One of the other nice things that Google has, of course, and it's not available still in the UK, is the Map Maker, which enables people to annotate maps as well and say, you know, this is useful in this location here, you know, that's something that isn't, that doesn't have a business necessarily attached to it. You can add those kind of things. It's very similar actually to the idea of Foursquare tips as well. I mean, you can add tips around the locations you're checking into. So I think, you know, as we've seen for a number of years, all of this location stuff continues to be important and is beginning to merge. In fact, I've got two folders on my iPhone. One of them is location, and one of them is travel. And travel, yeah. And very often, you know, the two things do kind of overlap, right? I mean, I use both when I'm traveling, but I tend to use travel as more as the route planners and the timetable type information, and the location as being more the recommendation engines and check-in type apps.
Very cool. And that's a nice way to pull them together. I think I'll have to do that same concept. Well, this feels like a natural place to pause and maybe to consider wrapping up show number one. What do you guys think?
00001, I think you mean.
That's right. We need all those zeros for future shows. Unfortunately, you were doing binary. I think one of the things that we need to do, though, is ask and ask our audience, you know, how they would like to participate. The Dog Ear Nation, we did via tags, but we really want to keep the focus here around, you know, that aspect of gaming and gaming work and work in gaming and gaming work and all that other good stuff. You know, have people follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork.biz, I believe is our Twitter account. And if not,
that's a really long, long, long name.
Yes. We want to make sure that nobody can retweet it, evidently.
Why don't they just follow us all as individuals?
They could do that too. But just like we had a Dog Ear Nation Twitter account to vote things out or broadcast information about the show, we have a Twitter account for this podcast.
Do we have a Google Plus page?
We do, I believe.
Amazing.
Yes, we do have one. I set it up a while back. We don't have a Facebook page yet.
But we will.
But we will. And we
email
for people to
Why do we need a Facebook page?
Because we need to be everywhere. Because people join different communities and want to play different games.
Crowds go different places?
Well, only if you say that and then I have to kill you. Because I know what you were going to say.
I didn't.
Say it.
I didn't. I was good.
And we want to, you know, we want to get your feedback on the show. We're looking for lots of different things as we go forward around, you know, music that you might like to hear at the beginning of the show. Looking for emails and ratings on iTunes. We will keep the same iTunes feed for a while, possibly forever. Just rename it.
Or we'll put a pointer in.
So, anything else, Andy, that you think we want to interact and hear from our listeners?
I don't want to hear from them personally. I'd rather just no. I mean, of course, it just let us know what kind of gaming topics, social and business topics you're interested in us hearing us discuss, and send in your feedback. That'd be fantastic. And you can follow me at Andy Piper on Twitter.
And that goes for me too. I'm interested in engaging also via Twitter and other means. Twitter will be a good one. It's Carolina Big Blue at Twitter, and I will be also excited to bring in special guests, which we'll do from time to time here, who have expertise in the field, so that we can enjoy their insights and kick around ideas that they're seeing as well.
Yep, and Michael Rose 01 at Twitter, so twitter.com/MichaelRose01, and actually have already been talking to a potential future guest who's focused on gaming at work, so very specific direct tie back to the show, and hopefully we'll get that lined up sometime soon.
All right, so long, everyone.
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and you can follow us at Twitter at GamesAtWork_BIZ. We'd like to thank the guys at Zebes Systems for their rocking version of the Moon Patrol game theme.